For the ones who know safety isn't a catchphrase, it's a culture. And the ones who help make sure everyone makes it home safe. For the safety-minded who watch everyone's backs, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as safety assessments and training to keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
BetOnline is your number one source for all your summer sports this season, from MLB, golf, NBA, and NHL playoff stats. All the latest stats, news, and scores available to follow your favorite teams. Get the latest odds and lines, including the latest team matchups, player props, odds, and just about everything sport out there. Head to the website today or use your mobile device to get in on the action. BetOnline, where the game starts. All right, anyway, let's look at some of the return game right here. As you can see, they got Rashid Shaheed with 55 attempts for 1,200 yards and returns. They got Bub Means listed as the kick returner behind him there. No touchdowns. We don't see the Saints getting any touchdowns right there. One special teams touchdown would be cool. We don't often get special teams touchdowns like a kick return or a punt return for a touchdown. Maybe Rashid Shaheed's a guy that can kind of do that for us. We know that Stanley Morgan Jr. is a guy that could bring in to do that role. Where does he sit in that whole mixture? You know, that's just stuff to talk about. And, of course, you look at the kicker, Blake Groupe, 27 to 33 for 84%. You see him kicking, doing his thing. Lou Hetley will be the punter, according to him. 71 attempts, over 3,000 yards, punting, 45.1 average there, with 28 punts landing inside the 20. Yard by Lou Hetley. Me personally, I didn't like how Lou Hetley punted last year. Of course, it was his rookie year. Him and Blake Groupe, those young guys, so they got to figure it out. But I think the Saints are not totally sold on them in it either. They brought in guys to challenge both Groupe and Lou Hetley for their position. So the Saints don't seem like they quite settled on those guys. They like them, but they got some competition that's coming in who can kick them on up out of here if they don't represent and do what they're supposed to do again. All right, so we shift to the defensive side of the ball. You see Nate Shepard there, 47 tackles, almost 2.6, he said 2.5 sacks right there for Nate Shepard. Brian Bercy, 536 snaps. He gets 34 tackles, 3.6 on the sack. That's what he's thinking. Colin Saunders, 48 tackles, a sack. Jack Heflin. Jack Heflin's another dude that can play football, but, you know, he flashed in training camp last year. Can he do that this year? Now, of course, a lot of people like Christian Boyd. A lot of people like, because really a lot of people's kind of looking at it and saying, man, listen, really Brian Bercy, a lot of people want to see Brian Bercy mature to the point where he's next to Colin Saunders, because that's what most people want to see. Nate Shepard shift to a reserve role, because I think Nate Shepard would be a good reserve DT. I think Brian Bercy, because Bercy and Saunders give the Saints athleticism with the big guys, two strong guys that's very difficult to block. And then you can keep those big guys fresh by cycling Nate Shepard, Christian Boyd, Cam Jordan. You can throw him in there because Cam's going to be in the mix, interiorly speaking, too, at times. But they're going to try to, wake up that NASCAR package that we like to see so much on. But you see that. You see Christian Boyd's there with 11 tackles right there on the season. So Jack Heflin, to him, is going to make it. That's interesting to see him thinking Jack Heflin's going to make it. Carl Granderson from the D's, you see 58 tackles from Carl, 7 sacks from Carl, not a surprise there. Cam Jordan, 4 sacks on 43 tackles from him. Chase Young, 31 tackles, 7.7. So they're looking at, he's looking at Chase Young being a leader of the team sack-wise. But we batting 1,000. If the Saints could pull up with 22, well, he got 22 sacks right here between the Saints right here. But, you know, he got Isaiah Foskey, got a sack, and Peyton Turner as the bottom guy there, passing yards there with 14 tackles as well. He's a part of the interior line look too. So you got Cam Jordan there. You got Cam and Tanu passing yards. Those guys could kind of switch inside. So the Saints slick side have a lot of versatility defensive-wise, you know, that they can utilize. Like Chase Young and Carl Granderson is healthy. You know, Cam could be used as a third situational guy to kind of spell him, or a guy that comes in there, plays inside. They can put passing in the mix with Brian Bercy, Colin Saunders, and Nate Shepard on the inside. Christian Boyd could be bringing up the rear. So it's a lot of ways that the Saints could use these talented defensive players that we have. We just got to stay healthy and keep the pressure on. Maybe we can reweight the term coming at opposing offenses in waves and waves of defenders that are fresh. That's something that could really turn the tide, because we've not had that consistent. Like, we have guys like a Peyton Turner, Isaiah Foskey coming here. Those guys get banged up, and it'll drop the overall depth of our defensive line. We need those guys to stay fresh. And hopefully doing it like that, we'll have access to all of those players, everybody staying healthy, you know, and the proper rotations happen. Everybody's fresh, firing off all on cylinders, man. We can be able to get that sack total up. But he had 22 sacks on the year. I think we can do better than that. All right, then from the linebacker look, Demario Davis got him penciled in 120 tackles this year with almost 3 sacks on the season. Pete Werner at 82. Willie Gay, our new picked up linebacker, at 61. So you're thinking that Willie Gay won't replace Pete Werner. Remember, that's the thing too. And I don't think this guy knows more in depth about the Saints team than we do. I mean, he's using some statistics to kind of guess at this stuff. So not all this stuff is accurate. But, you know, some of the topper layer, the well-known players facts actually, you know, stats actually could be something based on what we've seen from 2023 in this projection. So it's very interesting. So you can see Kalike Hudson bringing up the rear in the linebacker court. Then, you switch over to the cornerbacks, Paulson Adebo, 81 tackles. He has Paulson Adebo with 81 tackles and almost 3 interceptions on the year. Marshawn Lattimore, 68 tackles, almost 2 picks on the year. Alante Taylor, 52 tackles, a pick and a half. He got him almost there. Kool-Aid McKinstry with 27 tackles. And then they got Hugo Amadi as the other guy. So Paulson, Debo, Lattimore, Alante Taylor, Kool-Aid McKinstry, and Hugo Amadi brings up the cornerback room, the 5 cornerbacks he believes. And then, of course, our safety room, Tyrann Mathieu with 78 tackles, almost 3 sacks. There, hold on here. Let me see. I'm sorry, that's picks. I'm sorry, the picks. You got no sacks, but half a sack by him, but you got almost 3 picks by Tyrann Mathieu. Jordan Howden, our guy in his second year, 57 tackles. Jonathan Abram has 70 tackles. So you got Jonathan Abram in there as a safety with JT Gray, our special team guy, getting 5. So, you know, people ask me about the safety. How do a lot of family members feel that we kind of still need, could use some help in the safety room, but this, he's not accounting for Harris that the Saints picked up as well. Or perhaps he did. He just didn't put him on the active roster. They all added him to the team, because Harris is a part of this too. Could play cornerback or safety for the Saints. A lot of people saying, Q, what about some of these other guys bringing them in? And that's a possibility depending on what the Saints are working with from a cap perspective. You know, so, I mean, it's just one of those things that you got to just, you know, you think about, like, man, shouldn't the Saints, do you think the Saints could, you know, pick up one of these safeties? Well, a lot of people was asking me about Simmons, and I'm like, man, Simmons would be interesting, but, you know, Simmons doesn't work for cheap. He don't work cheap. If you look up his contract, man, that's why he's there. He's waiting for more money. And right now, according to the cap, the Saints are sitting up with just over 5.7 mil. So let me flash that to you guys so y'all can see for yourself. This is according to over the cap Saints rate right now. 5.7 plus. So you're going to take a little bit more than that to get Simmons aboard. But like I said, I think the Saints will probably play it out. But if the guy wants to work for cheap, hey, anything is possible, right? All right, so anyway, that's what it looks like there. That's some of the defense stand. And of course, you give you a projection of the Saints offensive line. Well, Talese Fuaga at left tackle. He picks Nick Saldivari to be the left guard with McCoy Ruiz and Penning at the right side. The backups for Fuagas, Landon Young, Shane Lemieux, for Nick Saldivari, Lucas Patrick, Ali Udo, and Ryan Ramczyk. So that's his projection going into the season, which is actually a damn good potential line, to be honest with you. I think Fuaga has a learning curve a bit, but Fuaga's going to be fine. Trevor Penning on the right side. I think Trevor Penning will do a good job on the right side. Now, listen. Playing left and right, that's different. Right side, we know about the pressures of it. But like I said, it's a different world when you got a guy to cover the quarterback's blind side. It's a lot of pressure. on a guy to do that. Can Tuilagi Fuaga do that? I think he can. Now, he might have a struggle here or there, but you might, like as the Saints offensive coordinator, Clint Kubiak, you got to do his young offensive lineman a favor. And what that pretty much means is he will have to, you know, help him out with blocks, tight ends, guys shifting that way. So like I said, who would be the running marker? Like if they're going to be a run-based offense, you would think the Saints will run the ball. It'd be 60-40, right? It'd be 60 run, 40 pass, right? That's a heavy run unit. That's not exactly balanced. It's like we're going to run the football. If that's the case, that helps out young offensive linemen because, you know, the majority of offensive linemen can run block. You know, the one that really makes them the money is if that big guy is athletic, is a dancing bear that can move around his feet and block some of these speed pass rushers off the ends. That's when he really makes his money. But if he's a big guy, if you got some of these big guys, like Coach John Benton, offensive line coach, said for the Saints, they believe in or what they operate, what he called the ambidextrous offense, which means it doesn't matter which position, which tackle position, in terms that which tackle occupies what position for the Saints. Like it really doesn't mean, you know, either way, but it does when you start passing the ball. But running the ball gives confidence to your young offensive lineman. So we can have a Fuaga and Penning on the ends, and Nick Saldiveri takes that left guard position. That's actually a pretty damn good. I like that line because I know each one of them dudes can play. I know Nick Saldiveri could play. Fuaga is talented. He'll be able to play. And Trevor Penning is athletic and mean. He gets some of that confidence back playing that opposite side. Help out the young lineman by running the ball. And we've seen the OTAs come back later on, the 28th of May, later on, a couple of days from now, matter of fact. Yeah. Well, actually, tomorrow. Goddamn. Tomorrow, the OTAs come back, the 28th to the 29th, I want to say. Is the OTAs? No, 28th to the 30th. I'm sorry. The 20th. So tomorrow, the OTAs, they come back with the OTAs and stuff like that. We'll be able to kind of look at some of the stuff that they got going on there. But yes, that is something that I think they're hitting on it. That's why I talked about it on one of the last streams. I think the Saints got it. I said that, by George, I think they got it. That this could be something special. It all just comes with our offensive linemen staying healthy and everybody doing what they're supposed to do, help them young offensive linemen by running the football. That's a big part of it. So this is some of the stuff the man talked about. Also, let's kind of switch over. I think that's everything. I think we add a few more things right here too. Let's look at the projection. You can see right here, he got weekly score projections and projected wins. The Carolina game, you can see right there, he even picked the score 22-19 or whatever, but I'm gonna just look at the win probability. 61% they beat Carolina, right? Then you got Dallas, 29%. You don't win that game. 47%, you don't win against Philly. 44%, you don't beat Atlanta. 26%, you don't beat KC. So what he has you coming out of the gate, which I spoke about this before, that's a very dangerous stretch of games. And if the Saints are not mentally strong, and like I said, listen, just like we looking at a Dallas, a Philly, Atlanta, and a KC, not so much of an Atlanta, but a KC in the mix. These teams, now we won't see KC until 5 weeks into the season, right? We get them week 5. They'll have a month worth of games to get their stuff straight, which I believe that they won't be mid-season form, but they'll be when you have 4 games of an opportunity to kind of learn each other, depending on how fast the progression is, you might be hitting on some cylinders then. But the Dallas game, it's going to still be a lot of rust. So that's a winnable game. The Philly game's a winnable game because of the rust. And then right at the month worth of games, the 4 games, we should know what we need to do. So it's all predicated on how fast the Saints offense pick up what Clint Kubiak is putting down. And if we can do that, we can have some success. But if you don't, you can find yourself in a hole very fast. Like Carolina, we expect that to be a win. No disrespect to Carolina. But the Dallas, the Philly, the Atlanta, and the KC games, if the Saints don't win those games, and I like it, don't have to be pretty, but you have to win. You have to, and I said this before, you have to learn and win while you learn it. You got to win while you learn it, because you can find yourself in a hole very fast in this schedule. Like, you can beat Carolina, you can very well lose four games in a row before you see Tampa Bay in week number six, and Tampa Bay in week number six is not a given either. So we have to, the Saints going to have to play with discipline. They're going to have to.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
They're going to have to step it up, because this schedule didn't do them any favors, man. It really did not early. So they're going to have to handle their business. Now, according to this ESPN guy, he has the Saints losing those four games, Dallas, Philly, Atlanta, and Kansas City. So you're sitting at 1-4 when you go to Tampa Bay, or when you come home against Tampa Bay. Now, you do beat Tampa, and then you beat Denver with Sean Payton. So that kind of sets everything right. Then you turn around, lose to the Chargers. You got you losing to the Chargers. You got you sweeping Carolina. He got you beating Carolina. He got you losing to Cleveland. And then you hit the bye week. So right there, let me see what that is. Let me see. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. So is that 6-6? So he got you 6. I think that's 6-6. He got you 6. Is that 6-6? Let me see. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. That's a, was that a loss? Yeah, that's a loss. 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. He got you beating Atlanta though. 5, 6. Yeah, that's 6. So 1, 2, 3, 2, 3, 4, 5 and 6. Is that 5 and 6? I want to say it's 5 and 6. So you're 5-6 coming into the bye week, 5-6. Then that's 5-6. So he don't have you beating Cleveland, got you losing to Cleveland basically 20-17. You do beat Atlanta in week number 10. He got you splitting with Atlanta, just what I said, and sweeping Carolina. He got you losing to the Chargers, and the Chargers barely, losing to the Chargers badly. So you're in the bye at 5-6. Then you come out of the bye week against the Rams. He got you beating the Rams. You beat the Rams. Then he have you beating the Giants, beating the Commanders. And then he has you, what is that? Losing to the Packers. He got you losing to the Packers. He got you beating Las Vegas, and he got you beating Tampa Bay. So, but he projects that we're going to get 8 wins, but that's not 8 wins, isn't it? Man, he must have count this stuff right. Hold on. Let me make sure I get the count total right, because I'm looking at his team, his win probability versus what he thinks the record, I mean, the thing's going to be. So that's what? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. 8, 9, 10. So he got you 10 wins this year. He got you eking out 10. That's weird, man. It's almost the same people I picked him to lose to. But he got you eking out 10 wins right here. But he projected wins at 8.8, which is 9 wins. But it's, I think if I counted this correctly. But then again, I see what he did. He got you there because the Tampa Bay game, he got it basically 50%, a 50-50 game. He don't know who going. I see what he did. He just basically, for the last game of the season, he just threw it up. He's like, I don't know who going to win this one. So it's a 50-50 game. But basically predicting the Saints to win 9 games, but he's saying 8.8, which is basically 9. So he think he's going to win the same amount of games that he did from last year, according to what he's picking on here. So anyway, So, yes, I mean, like I said, it's just something that food for thought to go over and look, because, like I said, if you look at the 2023 projection, that was actually pretty solid. He did a damn good job on that projection. So, like I said, now I've polled the Who Dat Nation. I asked them countless times, who do you guys think, how many games do you think the Saints are going to win? A lot of people said between 9 and 10 games, because you can basically see the team winning 9 or 10 games. And really, it's dependent on, like I said, if the Saints handle the first 5 weeks of the season, that'll be huge. Because if you look at the schedule, you got a Denver game at home. That's a winnable game. You got you have to go to the West Coast, because this is the thing. You got to go to the West Coast for the Chargers and then fly all the way. You know, you go all the way out there on the West Coast to play the Chargers. And then the next game you have, it's just the Carolina game in their building. So you're going from coast to coast. So, you know, you have to watch out and see if they have some travel issues in terms of them getting a little laggy or being kind of road weary to a degree, going from coast to coast and back to back. It ain't really do us no favors sending us out to LA and then have to fly all the way to Carolina in week number 10. So in week number 9. So, depending on, you know, if they have some jet lag right there, it's going to be interesting. But listen, if you break it down and look at this schedule, if the Saints handle them first, depends on how they handle those first 5 games, man. That's really the thing, because the Denver game is winnable. They could very well, I think they split with Tampa. They can very well sweep Tampa depending on how they're playing. A lot of people think the Cleveland game is going to be a trap game. I really do think that, because the way it's positioned, that's a big trap game. If you want to pick out the schedule, say, Q, where the trap game at? The trap game is week 11 at home against Cleveland, because you play Atlanta at home the week before, and then you have a bye week behind Cleveland. So the Saints could be taking Atlanta. And remember, this Atlanta game is the second game of the series with Atlanta. So depending on how they play, they're going to put a lot of energy into that game. And then you have Cleveland the next week, and then after Cleveland, a bye week. So we pencil in there, and that's why I say you got to watch out for that Cleveland game. That'll show me the Saints are really focused if they can take care of Atlanta and then beat Cleveland and go into the bye week. Then they come out of the bye week against the Rams, and then they have the Giants and Commanders, which are two winnable teams because they're young teams. I don't know what the Giants are going to do with Daniel Jones. They got Malik Nabers there and a few other pieces, but I really don't know what the Giants are going to do. A couple of years ago, they were something else. This year, they kind of fell off. Do they return to what they were? We don't know. Washington, the Commanders with Jaden Daniels, I know him running around there. That won't be, won't be easy. But in the end, you got to say, man, if we handle up, you never know though, man. The Green Bay game, a lot of people think we don't beat Green Bay. We should beat that Green Bay team. I know they're good, Green Bay. Last year, we should have beat Green Bay. We should have beat Green Bay last year. So it's a lot of coulda, woulda, shoulda, and it's based upon the Saints playing better football, more balanced, more aware, more intelligent football, more high IQ football, less error-prone football with Clint Kubiak at the helm. And if they're playing a smart brand of football like we anticipate them doing with Clint Kubiak, we played all these interviews and you heard what they were saying, and they were talking just like the Sports Coma, just like the great Saint Thang Tank was talking, even down to the offensive line, this, that, and third. We were saying that weeks prior. So if they're actually implementing some of them strategies, fam, they could very well do something popping. But like I said, you got to wait and see, because, man, weeks 2 through 5 will tell you everything. That's a lot. They put them people clumped a bunch of really difficult teams together and threw Atlanta in the mix along with Canton. Then you got KC, and then it's a mix of home and away games. So you're traveling here or there while they didn't do the Saints no favors early on. So it's going to be interesting to see how the Saints deal with the first 5 weeks of the season. Hopefully they don't end up in a 1-4 hole, man. You know, that could be problematic, fighting your way up for the entire season, man. That is, hopefully we don't end up like that. But anyway, just kind of you know, remind ourselves a bit of our coaching staff, man. We all know who Dennis Allen is, but just kind of focus on who these guys are. We talk on the offensive side of the ball. Clint Kubiak obviously is the guy that we know all about what he's going to do. We also know about Andrew Janoku, who's the QB coach. Tight end Clancy Barone, he's the tight end coach. Clancy was here last year. Looking forward to what he do with this group of tight ends that we got. Offensive line coach John Benton was a guy that we heard 5 minutes from. Got to hear more from John Benton and his philosophy with the offensive line, because that's going to tell the tale. The offensive assistant is Mr. Jari Evans. He's there. We got a lot of young faces for the family members who might not know some of these guys. Senior offensive assistant Rick Denson is here. He's a senior offensive. He'll work with Clint Kubiak there. So you got Rick Denson here. He also worked with Gary Kubiak. Rick Denson worked with Clint's father. So you're bringing in a veteran to help him out here along with Andrew Janoku. Running backs coach is Derek Foster. Remember I talked about Derek Foster. I played interviews from Derek Foster. Super cool dude. Like I said, there was a lot of turnover in the offensive room in terms of our coaches. These are the faces now. You know, they got a couple of guys that you kind of, you know, are familiar with. Clancy Barone from last year, but a lot of Jari Evans, but a lot of these guys, this is all kind of turnover. Like I said, it's like 75% the offensive running room basically turnover. So Derek Foster, the running backs coach, is there. We talked about Janoku. You got Mike Martinez is the assistant coach there. Assistant wide receiver coach is Denarius McGee. He works with coach Keith Williams, who's another guy there. Jordan Traylor turned down a job with Denver, I think last year, to come back to the Saints, and offensive assistant Kevin Petrie. So these are the offensive faces that we will know. And of course, I think it, eventually you'll see when John Gruden finally gets through all of his stuff, I can see the Saints kind of creating a position for John Gruden to step on this, you know, step in here as a special assistant or some crap like that once he gets through his legal situations with the NFL, because the way it's hedging out, and we covered this on the previous stream, the way it's hedging out is that the NFL is going to end up winning the process, where arbitration would be the move that happens. And like I said, that was the decision made by the court, and Gruden's appealing the decision. So he's hoping that it plays itself out front of everybody, because he wants to, quote, burn the league down, end quote. But the thing is, you can't burn the league down when the guy that has access to all of the gasoline and the matches is Roger Goodell. And Roger Goodell in the NFL is just, they're a team that built up an uncanny amount of political leverage. They're a billion-dollar league. They have a lot of people in their pockets, and they can afford to pay people whoever they want. And like I said, they have a lot of leverage. So John Gruden's trying to do his thing. it's so corrupt, it's ridiculous. But at the end of the day, man, we already knew that, right? I'd just be fun watching them go at him, because you never know. You might have a group of judges said, you know what, man, let's see what you got right here and air it out in front of everybody. League don't want you to know their dirty business. They don't want to know, let you know all the stuff that's going on, because really John Gruden has something that can really destroy Roger Goodell and bring him and others down that's being protected. That he really has something. You know, he had, man, listen, John Gruden got something that could take, that's why Goodell's so scared of this. But I'm telling you, he has something that will bring Goodell down. And, you know, Goodell's going to fight the only way he know how to. Anyway, let's go defensive coaches. Joe Woods is the guy. Like I said, man, I would love to see Joe Woods as a guy that takes over the play calling for the defense. I would like to see Dennis Allen kind of graduate to becoming a full-time head coach. And what I mean by that is allowing Joe Woods, who's the defensive coordinator, to call the plays on defense. He's been working with Dennis Allen for years. That allowed Dennis Allen to have more of a expanded view of watching the team. That's one of the last things that I would love to see happen. I would love to see that. If, you know, all the things that we talked about over the years that's finally coming true this year, one of the more ultimate things that you'll hear an announcement from Dennis Allen saying, hey, family, or saying to, I've decided that we're going to let Joe Woods call the plays this year, and I'm going to focus on being more of a head coach. If you hear that, then y'all know what time that is. But that is one of the final things that I want to hear Dennis Allen says. Like, listen, I'm going to let Joe Woods call the defensive plays, and I'm going to focus more on just oversighting the entire team, watching, making sure everything goes the way it's supposed to. So instead of just focusing on the defense, I'm going to focus on the entire unit. Joe Woods is more than capable. And if he says that, man, I'm like, man, we good. We good now. We good now. Just stay out of everybody's way and just people just give you updates. Let these guys do their job, because I think he got the right collection of people. Just stay out the way. Let them do their jobs and just let them brief you on what they're going to do.
The Sports Comb is brought to you by Bet Online, where the game starts.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, didn't see that coming, and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.